Hello, everyone. Welcome to Airing It Out, Files from Leahy's broadcast booth. My name is John Leahy. Delighted to have you along for the podcast this week. I hope you enjoyed last week's replay as we did an interview we did with Keith Radd, who is the play-by-play voice of the New York Mets. Keith is a former colleague of mine. And that interview we did was the right before he was announced as the play-by-play voice of the New York Mets. So it's kind of cool to go back and listen to Keith just before he got to the major league. So if you'd like to check out that episode or any other episode we have, please head on over to the website we have for the podcast. You can find it at LeahyStorytelling.com. That's L-E-A-H-Y Storytelling.com. All the episodes are there. There's a lot of other cool features as well. There's a blog. There's a video area. And there is also a means for you to contact me by voice message. There's a purple microphone at the lower right-hand corner of each page. And you can also leave a review of any episode you'd like from 0 to 5 stars. Or you could also leave your own written review. Also, please check out my website at johnrleahy.com. And that website links directly to the podcast. So everything's interactive. And we'd love to hear from you if you have any thoughts or suggestions, anything you'd like to hear for the podcast, please feel free and check that out. Well, this week, we are going to be talking some hockey, some college hockey, as the Frozen Four is upon us. Frozen Four will be taking place this coming Thursday. It's going to be at the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, home of the NHL's Minnesota Wild. And here to help us break down the Frozen Four, we welcome him to the podcast for the first time, the voice of Boston College hockey on television. It is Eric Galanti. Eric, great to have you here with us, my friend.
John, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. And anything to still talk hockey while the weather's finally turning warm is a good thing in my book.
Yeah, you got that right. And you're a very appropriate person to have on this Frozen Four preview episode because the team you do broadcasting for, the Boston College Eagles, is in the Frozen Four. We're going to get to their matchup with Michigan in a little bit. But Eric, I thought we'd start by just taking a look back at the 23-24 season in Hockey East. And what a season we had. It was really a record-breaking season, particularly for Boston College. They only lost 5 games all season. But, you know, I'd like to get your thoughts on the season, Eric. There were some programs that certainly I feel that are on the rise, some that are holding the line, and a couple of programs that took a step back. So let me start by your general thoughts on this season that just ended.
Yeah, I think it was kind of true in Hockey East, and it was true across the country, and it's sort of fitting that the four teams that are in the Frozen Four are those, because it kind of felt like from the start it was sort of a return of the Blue Bloods in Hockey East. It was a return of the Blue Bloods nationally. As a sort of big picture starting point, it felt like that was kind of the defining feature of the season, wasn't it? Obviously, Boston College and Boston University, but also Maine. It was really kind of one of those years. I remember talking to a couple of people, probably the first week of December, which was a couple of weeks before BC and BU played for the first time. And we were sort of saying, are we talking enough about the fact that BC and BU are 1 and 2 in the country? Like, that, as much as we think of those programs as the history that they have, that doesn't happen. In fact, it hasn't happened literally. Are we talking about that enough? Like, how special a season this could be just from them. And then you throw on top of it Maine, and you throw on top of it New Hampshire, and you throw on top of it, you know, UMass bouncing back and having the year that they did. And really on down the list, Providence, you know, you could go on. It just kind of felt like a special year in Hockey East all the way through. And it just felt like every week it just kept living up to it, right? It never really disappointed. I mean, you know, maybe the games at the Hockey East Championship weren't as close as we thought or we were even hoping. But, you know, even beyond that, you know, from the level of freshman classes coming in. And again, I think we kind of all knew and expected that it could be, you know, a really special season, but it just felt like it kept exceeding over and over again. And that was a pretty cool thing. The return of some of those marquee brands, which, you know, means something. It doesn't mean everything, but it means something, right? So it was a really special year with a lot of high end players. And it felt like hockey's kind of rightly took its place as, you know, returning to one of, if not the best conference in college hockey.
You know, I remember you making reference to the fact that the BC and BU were 1 and 2 and not enough attention was being drawn to it. I remember that particular broadcast. I was watching it And, you know, now you take a look at this BC team, for example. We all knew they were going to be good. We figured they were going to take a step up from last year. But did you think in your wildest dreams they were going to be as good as they are?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was funny because I remember talking to Greg Brown back in, this would have been the last week of September. And we just did, you know, I've done this with coaches sometimes. I'm sure you have as well in your broadcast travels of, hey, give me an hour before you get busy. Just give me like something on every guy. We'll, you know, be able to use it so I don't have to bug you all year. And we were asking like, okay, these kids, you know, played together last year at the National Team Development Program for, I'm sure folks know, but for those who don't, Perot, Smith and Leonard were on the same line last year. They've obviously been on the same line this year. And I said, you know, do you think you can play them together? And it's funny to look back and think about it now, because his answer at the time was not yes. It was hopefully, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to hold up defensively. And, you know, we'll have to see, because they're 18-year-olds. And
yeah,
same thing with Macklin Celebrini, right? You know, at some point you can project all you want, but at some point when you're 17, you're still 17, right? And, you know, same with, you know, Matthew Wood and those guys last year. So, you know, I think at the beginning of the season, you certainly knew there was going to be this hype. And the thing that was cool about Boston College's start to the season, and this was true of a lot of Hockey East teams, and it was one of the reasons I think this year got off to such a good start, is they all scheduled really hard with non-conference games. So like that second and third week, Denver and Michigan State came in. BU played, you know, North Dakota right away. And Quinnipiac at the beginning too. Providence went to Michigan. UMass played Michigan, went to Minnesota State, who I know didn't end up having the year. But so you kind of got to see them against the best right away. And they lost that game to Denver. And it was a game that they were leading after leading after two periods, but lost the lead in the third, BC. And I think you came, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. And you came away from that game, at least I did, and was like, okay, you know, this team's really good. So was that 2000-2001 team, probably going to be similar to that. You know, we'll see. And the fact that they bounced back the way they did that very next week against Michigan State, even though Michigan State was in a similar spot where they were very, very young, hadn't exactly been at that level for a while, but you could kind of see projecting wise, this is going to be one of the teams there. And the fact that they really controlled that weekend really stuck out as like, okay, there might be something here. And then obviously, they've turned it on and they've just kept raising their game. But the thing that kind of has been the differentiator, as impressive as all of those kids, for lack of a better word, are, is, Jacob Fowler was highly thought of, but maybe not in the same way as, you know, even just say Spencer Knight a couple of years ago, who was, you know, the things you read about him at the time. And, you know, what Devin Levi turned into, and what, you know, even Michael Hrabal was drafted ahead of him, and Trey Augustine has been ahead of him in the U.S. system, and Fowler's been much more of a late blooming prospect than some of those other guys. But you could see it right away with him. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we've talked a lot about with this Boston College team is they're number one in penalty kill in the country, which is obviously different than what you would think of as a skilled team. But it's not to say that it's because, you know, they're running this really, really, really advanced system. It's because Jacob Fowler has lived up to the adage of you need your best penalty killer to be your goalie. And there was a stretch from the end of that Michigan State weekend through the end of the first half where he had a 982 save percentage on the penalty kill. I mean, it's just completely unheard of. And that was probably the thing that felt like, hey, he might have something here, even if he's not like, you know, a first round pick as a goalie. But that combined with all the other stuff you were seeing, it felt like, you know, that was something that could really make this special. And I could go on and talk about other reasons, but, you know, that I think that's the thing that kind of stood out.
Is it possible for BU to fly under the radar here with the season Boston College had? You know, BU won the Hockey East Championship last year, and they made the NCAA tournament. Another solid season for the Terriers. But, you know, I'm wondering, is it possible for this BU team to fly under the radar?
Yeah, you know, maybe a little. It's interesting because the thing that really stands out about them to me, John, is remember at the beginning of the season, they lost that game to New Hampshire, which kind of surprised us all. And I don't think we really realized what New Hampshire was going to be yet. And then remember, they turned around and lost those that exhibition game to the National Team Development Program, which, to be clear, does not matter.
And
but
they were trounced. Yeah, they were trounced in
that's
that
what I was
game.
gonna say. They gave up a ton of goals.
Yeah.
And then they went to Notre Dame that first game against Notre Dame and gave up a ton of goals. Notre Dame was the team I was thinking of earlier. They gave up a ton of goals.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my, is this going to go off the rails because they don't have a defense? And then all of a sudden you look at it now, and I'm not sure off the top of my head what it is right now. They obviously played well in both regionals, but going into the hockeyist tournament, they had given up like 10 goals in their prior seven games, which is a combination of Caron and the way the defense is played and Jay Pandolfo's defensive structure and system, which they've really committed to. And that's the thing that sort of leads you to believe that, you know, they have as good a chance as anything. Cause we obviously understand the high skill that they have. They've made some subtle adjustments, which honestly Boston College has not had to make as much with their lines. And the fact that they've sort of found this freshman line of their own with Harvey and LeChance now playing with Macklin Celebrini. LeChance is the one that's really stood out to me recently on that grouping. And he's the one that's moved up the most recently. And since he moved up, they've only lost the hockey's final to BC was their only loss. So, yeah, at this point, now that they're in the Frozen Four, it feels like all the teams there are very, very capable and highly touted. So maybe not under the radar at some point, but there was definitely a while where, you know, it felt like the voting hadn't quite caught back up to, you know, how good BU was. And, you know, it was probably deserved that those two were 1-2 as we've got through the year.
Well, here's how I have the hockey season kind of broken down. Programs on the rise, Boston College, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. I think Vermont made big strides.
Yep, I agree.
With their new coaching change. Holding the line, I have UMass, Providence, BU, and UConn. BU because they did not drop off. And taking a step back, Merrimack and UMass Lowell. So that's kind of where I have the league right now, based on what we saw, you know, in the season.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense. The one that, you know, kind of stood out what you were saying is maybe UMass, you know, holding the line is the right way to say it. But the fact that they kind of slipped the way they did last year, and one of the things that we heard from Greg Carvel through the offseason and through media day was, and I'm paraphrasing, was, I know what went wrong. I know how to fix this. We're going to be fine. And when you are, you know, and you know this, when you're a new program that sort of has gotten to the top of the, you know, proverbial world, and you're there for a while, and then you have that slip, the hardest thing is not winning it once. It's the staying there.
Yeah.
And the fact that they kind of lived up to everything that he said in the offseason, you know, whether that meant they, you know, were going to be able to advance farther than they did, but the fact that they got back to the Garden, the fact that they were, you know, they got in the tournament as close as it was, I think is a pretty big, you know, feather in Coach Carvel's cap and of that program. Cause, you know, how many times have we seen in any sport, not just hockey, you know, a program get there, they have their 3 or 4 year run, and then that's it. And then you never see them, you never hear from them again. And last year was a very clear first of that kind of thing. So the fact that they sort of bounced back the way they did was pretty impressive from UMass.
And Eric, let's talk about the rookies that we saw, the freshmen this year. I would be hard pressed to find another year that where there's been a group of freshmen that have made as big an impact as these guys. Mm-hmm. Of course, we touched on Macklin Celebrini for BU. And that whole freshman line for BC has been just terrific. The numbers are off the charts with Smith, Leonard, and Perot. And we have to also mention the Nadeau brothers up in Maine, who were terrific. So maybe you could just comment a little bit on the rookies and the impact you felt they made.
Yeah, the most exclusive club was getting on the Hockey East All-Rookie team this year, right? You could have had a second team that probably would have rivaled a lot of different years. You know, guys like Jack Musa and Ryan Conmee, and you could go on, who obviously weren't even, you know, close compared to what those other guys were. And there was nothing against their seasons. I'm trying to remember the number off the top of my head. It was like this year's all rookie team had 5 skaters. Last year's had 7, and this year's 5 skaters outscored last year's 7 by like 35 points or something like that, just in hockey's play. The thing that's interesting about the BC group is that, you know, number one, there has not been a game this year where at least one of the three of them have not scored, which, I mean, that's really, really hard to believe. And they sort of have all found their roles. And, you know, Gabe Perreault was the one that probably was sort of the surprise just based on where he was drafted. And he was the first to 50 points in the country. And obviously, you know, he missed a couple of games. Will Smith now has the national lead. And he was the one that kind of took charge in the hockey's championship game, scoring those four goals. But the one that jumped off the page first, and he doesn't have as many points as the other two, even though he has more goals than any Boston College freshman has scored, passing Brian Gionta. Ryan Leonard is the kind of guy that, it's a cliche thing to say, so forgive that, but like he's the one that wins you championships because of the way he plays and the fact that he has that high level of scoring ability, but then also is that type of hockey player that is your favorite player if he's on your team, and he's your least favorite player if he's on the other team. And he was really, you know, deserving of the most outstanding player of the regional for BC, because it felt like he was just everywhere that weekend. The other thing that I've been really impressed with about these BC freshmen, and it includes Cutter also, is that they've played penalty kill the whole year, and they've been really good at it. Obviously, we talked about their number one penalty kill in the country, so that stands out. The Nadeau brothers as well, it's amazing how, you know, one person can kind of, two people in this case, can just sort of, not that they were the only reason that Maine, you know, flipped the way they did this year, and I think a lot of people saw it coming at least to some degree, but it's hard not to make the comparison to Makar, right? Because it's the same, that third year for Ben Barr at Maine, third year for Greg Carville at UMass with Ben Barr there. They had that level of impact. And then Celebrini to be a center in this league and, you know, to do what he's done, it really, you could come up with stats to try to put it into context, but it's just, it's hard to do. It's hard to put into words how special a year it's been. And I guess the other thing that's worth talking about is just that the biggest change has been that these high, high, high end guys are choosing college hockey as a route, right? Which was true to some degree before, but not at the degree it is now. And that's going to continue, right? The guy who's going to be next year's Macklin Celebrini and probably the number one overall pick in 25 is going to play BC next year. So it doesn't seem like there's any sign of that slowing down.
We saw a good one at Merrimack as well. And Ty Deneau, mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a rising star in Hockey East.
Yep. I agree. It's going to your second all rookie team in Hockey East this year was about as good as a first team most years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was really special to watch this crop of freshmen and looking forward to move ahead here.
And I think the other thing it's worth, sorry to interrupt, you know, the thing that's interesting now is because didn't it feel like in college hockey when Duluth went through their run of titles and a couple of those other teams and even UMass to some degree, that those young, high skill, youngest four teams in the country could get through a regular season, but they were not winning in the NCAA tournament, right? I mean, you just talking about Boston College, because we've been talking about them, that team that, you know, the Boldy Newhook Knight team of 21 got there. They were the number one team in the country a lot of the year, and then they got blown out, for lack of a better word, to St. Cloud. I mean, it wasn't even, you know, close. It felt like that was sort of happening, but now this trend has come back to those high skill freshmen, young draft pick teams are able to get through the tournament, and we've now seen it this year. It felt like it was coming, and this year sort of validates it. And there's probably a few different reasons why. One of the ones that stand out is, folks remember, you know, Jerry York always used to talk about trophy season starting with Bean Pot and then running through. But
yep.
Now World Juniors starting where they are, and all these guys are playing internationally. Like it feels like trophy season, big time season, just runs all the way through. So now you have a Boston College team that's the only one without Frozen Four experience, but it's not like they don't have big game experience going in, and that sort of has created an interesting dynamic as well.
Absolutely, Eric. And I think one of the more interesting notes about this Frozen Four is that all four teams are coached by alums. So mm-hmm. that's an interesting dynamic there. Greg Brown, of course, played at BC, Jay Pandolfo mm-hmm. at BU, David Carl, a former Denver Pioneer, and Brendan Nerato at Michigan. So an interesting side story there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And it's the first time since 1990 that BC and BU are in the Frozen Four. And of course, Greg Brown was on that BC team that year. Both of them lost that year in the semifinals. So they're hoping to avoid a repeat of that. But yeah, it is, you know, I think we're at I think it's like 36% of the country, it's alums coaching their alma mater. But yes, it does present an interesting wrinkle. And those four guys are all young and feel like they could have a lot of success for a very, very long time. David Carl obviously has been there longer than the rest, but it doesn't feel like those four programs and these blue bloods are going to back up anytime soon.
Yeah, David Carl is the youngest coach in Division One college hockey, but he is a brilliant mind. And the Pioneers won the national title under his tutelage a few years ago in Boston, as a matter of fact. So Denver's going to be very, very tough. Let's take a look, if we could, Eric, at these two games. I'd like to get your thoughts on them. The first game will take place on Thursday at 5 o'clock at the Xcel Energy Center. The BU Terriers will take on the Denver Pioneers. BU is 28-9-2. Denver is 39-3. Denver has won the last four meetings, Eric, but BU has not beaten Denver since Halloween night 2015. They haven't played each other since October 27th of 2017. And obviously the two big guns are Macklin Celebrini on the Terrier side and Jack Devine on the Denver side. And we can go into a little bit more of the top guns, but I think for both teams, Eric, I think the commitment is going to be on defense.
Yeah, it's from a big picture standpoint, right? We have the top four offenses in the country in the Frozen Four. So the easy way to say it, right, is whoever plays the best defense is going to win. I've been talking to people about this, and I find that the conversation I've had about Boston College is very similar to the conversation about Denver. And I'm going to paint with a broad brush a little bit, but it's they've had a key guy injured for a while now, and yet they have had their best stretch of the season during that time. And that's Massimo Rizzo for Denver, who everything we've heard is they're hopeful that he can play, but I don't think we've heard from for sure. Since he's been out, they're 12-1-1. So not only is that impressive to me, they've lost their power play during that time. They're only 3 for their last 30 in the power play, Denver, though they obviously had a huge power play goal against Cornell, which was the game winner from Harris. So those two things stand out. And it feels like, let me think of the right way to phrase this. That's not putting anyone down. The way that the style that Cornell and UMass played and the style that Michigan Tech and Quinnipiac played is normally the toughest style to play against. None of the teams that are in the Frozen Four play that way. So does it feel like Denver and Boston College played their toughest game of the tournament already? You could argue that that doesn't mean that the other teams are going to be easy to beat, right? Tough in terms of the style of play, if that makes sense. So those two things feel fairly similar to me. So I guess that's number one with Denver. And if Rizzo does come back, it sort of does what Perreault coming back does to BC. It's not that they were losing without him, but it just sort of fills everything out. We saw Denver win their first two games of the season, scoring two goals. They hadn't done, I mean, they only done it three times all year prior, but they hadn't won a game only scoring two. Now they've won two in a row. And you know, how often do you see a team like this where a lot of skill, a lot of offense, really impressive? This is actually similar to BU. And oh, they have Matt Davis in goal. Oh, they have Matthew Perron in goal. That kind of, but both of these guys have been pretty good. Davis was the national goalie of the month. He has a got to hear 931 save percentage and a shutout in his last 10 games. He made 46 saves and two overtimes against UMass, and obviously made that huge save late against Cornell. Matthew Perron, folks may know this around Hockey East. He had the second most wins in a Hockey East regular season since 1985. And the only person who had more was the one who beat him in the Hockey East Championship game, because Jacob Fowler had 19 this year. Those are the two winningest. I know everyone doesn't treat goalie wins as a stat in the same way, but just using that for context. So both of these teams have goalies that maybe don't, again, jump off the draft board, but have been really, really solid. BU, if they can stick to that defensive structure that really has allowed them to kind of have some success here, you know, I think they have a chance, but this is a really dangerous Denver team. I guess the one thing you do really like if you're BU is you saw them come from behind. They were down 2-0 against Minnesota, and the fact that they came back does, you know, it really stands out. And as was the case, you know, against Maine in the Hockey East semis, you know, BU's power play against the Denver team that's at 77% on the PK this year. They've been better lately over their last 11, but It's not a, amazing penalty kill statistically. So that's that perhaps is a spot that BU can have an advantage.
You know, Macklin Celebrini gets a lot of headlines, and rightly so. He has 64 points, 32 goals, 32 assists. But you got to look at Lane Hutson, who can dominate a game when he's on the ice. He scored the game-winning goal in the Hockey's Championship against Merrimack at the Garden last year. He is one of the best defensemen in the country.
Yeah, he is.
Without question.
He reminds me of Adam Fox more than anyone that I've seen, and just the way he's able to shift his body on the power play and create lanes and opportunities. Fox feels like the only one that I've seen be able to move and sort of do things in the same way. He's really, really solid. And by the way, he's pretty good defensively as well. We talk about the offense as well, but him along with everyone else in that group has been really solid defensively. I think that's the thing when BU changed their lines, right? It wasn't that they created this freshman line that's so, so dominant, but it just felt like it created a little bit more depth through their forwards, their defense pairings. It just feels like there's more depth than it felt like they maybe had at the beginning of the season. And Hutson, stands out. His brother's been pretty good too, slightly under the radar, maybe as under the radar as anyone in Hockey East, but yeah, he's a really, really fun player to watch and could have a pretty big impact. And, we'll see, BU's going to be the home team. So, if it's Rizzo, that Rizzo divine line sort of acts like at that really big top line, not that Denver can't fill out the card, but who matches up against them. That'll be interesting to see.
If this game winds up being a track meet, who do you think it'll favor?
It's hard. That's the thing about this Frozen Four is that, again, I'm simplifying, but it feels like they all kind of play the same way, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say, just take BC Quinnipiac. If it's a track meet, we understand who it favors, right? Same thing with, Denver playing Cornell. It's harder to figure that out with this one. I guess I would lean BU, but it just because of the bias of having seen them more. But I really, really think this Denver team's got as good a shot as anyone.
Absolutely. BU is 9-1 in their last 10. They're 12-2-1 in their last 15. Denver has won 7 straight. Their last loss was on March 8th at Colorado College. As Eric mentioned, Denver is 10-1 in their last 11, 12-1-1 in the last 14 games. So something's got to give here, Eric.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right, let's take a look at the Boston College-Michigan matchup. Before we do, I'll just remind you that you're listening to Airing It Out, files from Leahy's broadcast booth. We are visiting with Eric Galanti. If you follow college hockey here in New England, you are familiar with his work, as he does a lot of work for Boston College on ESPN Plus and NESN. So, Eric, let's take a look at this BC-Michigan matchup. BC 33-5-1. Michigan is 23-14-3. This is the second game. 8:30 on ESPN2. Boston College has won 14 straight, so if they're going to win the national title, they're going to have to end the season with 16 consecutive wins. Michigan, no slouch either. The Wolverines have gone 8-2 in their last 10. Let's start with your breakdown of this game.
Yeah, the thing with Michigan is, again, sometimes cliches become things because they're true, right? But it's only a few weeks ago that Michigan was pretty firmly on the bubble in the pairwise. And, they've been playing playoff hockey for a while now. Their only loss here of late is that Michigan State game in the Big Ten final. They obviously avenged that in the regionals. A lot of same thing here, right? Really, really high-end guys. Michigan's power play, I was reading this in Michigan's game notes this morning, at 34.5%, not only is the best in the country this year, it's the best power play rate anyone's had since 1987 with Harvard. So they're lethal there. Rutger McGrady, kind of folks learned about him at the World Juniors this year. There's a Hockey's connection with Marshall Warren, who's a former Boston College captain last year and playing his grad year with Michigan. He scored a goal against Michigan State in the regional final. So you got to give a lot of credit to this Michigan team. And the thing that's sort of different is, boy, underdog feels like too strong a word, but of the teams, they're the only non-number one. They don't quite have the freshman class of these other teams. Now they have the sophomore class of these other teams, but it feels like they're coming in maybe with maybe a touch more of a chip on their shoulder than the last couple of years. Does that help? We'll see. It's Jake Barczewski, who's been in goal. He was at Canisius for 4 years. He's a grad transfer. He was really good against Michigan State, 38 saves. So again, you got a couple of goalies here in this tournament, in this Frozen Four, that, you know, maybe they weren't the high draft picks, but boy, they've been playing well here recently. I think the things that stand out though for the Boston College side of it is, on the one hand, as we've said earlier, they're the only team without Frozen Four experience in this group. Denver won the national championship 2 years ago. BU and Michigan have been there. But the other statistical thing that they have is they have by far the best penalty kill of any of these four teams. They're number one in the country. The other three are not above 80% for the year. Mm-hmm. So is that an advantage for them in what you talked about might be a track meet-ish weekend? Theoretically, they have the best goalie of the four, but all these guys are playing really well. It can be hard to distinguish. But I am starting to think more and more the thing they have that's the X factor is they have Ryan Leonard and no one else does. And it's, again, it's hard to separate all these freshmen out, but Leonard has done things in these playoff games and the way he plays that's just, when you combine that with his skill, does things that really could be a differentiator. Power play is going to be crucial. Boston College power play second in the country, by the way. So you have one and two here. Special teams is going to be a huge factor. We saw BC, like BU, if there was any team in the country that you thought with a lead could hold it in the third period against BC, it's Quinnipiac, and they played 98% of a perfect third period. They made one mistake in Aaron Minetti and put it in the net. So to their credit, they came back the same way that BU did. On the one hand, there's a lot of really, really dangerous things about Michigan. On the other hand, some of this has started to feel inevitable. Now, that's not usually a good place to analyze from, but there are some tenets of that, of what should be a really good game.
Yeah, and the other player I wanted to mention from Michigan is Gavin Brindley, who is a terrific player, 25 goals, 28 assists, 53 points. Michigan has, you mentioned McGroarty, so he and Brindley have they've exceeded the 50-point mark, and Dylan Duke is 1 point away from 50. So a lot of weapons on this Michigan team, and I really feel that the only way BC can not be successful is if they beat themselves.
Yeah, they've been pretty good at staying out of the penalty box all year. Took a couple of majors and a couple of playoff games, but as we've talked about with their penalty kill, they've been able to kill it off. Fowler seems like the kind of guy that, again, you know, pretty unflappable in these moments. The thing that we were told about him coming in is his scouting report is, you know, his best trait as a goalie was that he wins, which you get sometimes. A lot of folks compared it to John Muse, who obviously won a national championship as a freshman at Boston College. Your listeners may know this, but one other stat that stands out, Fowler set the record for most wins by a freshman goalie in college hockey history with his 31st win against Quinnipiac. There are a lot of things that it feels like could be a tiebreaker that Boston College has. Which one that is, we'll see. But it's one of the reasons they've been so hard to beat recently, because, you know, they have defensemen who have started scoring. You know, Powell went on a 15-game point streak, and Aaron Minetti, and obviously, is the one who scored the goal. So they've gotten scoring from their defense. They've gotten scoring, you know, their depth of their forwards. That Cutter, Gasso, Jelvik line has been as good as any in Hockey East, and, you know, arguably it's the second-best line on the team. So, you know, they're deep, they're good, their penalty kill really stands out, their goalie really stands out. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about their prospects.
Yeah, one thing I really loved about Greg Brown is that what he said about Jacob Fowler. He's so calm under any situation, doesn't get rattled. And that's the kind of goalie you need in a championship situation.
Mm-hmm. And so is Greg Brown, by the way, right? I mean, he's just about as unflappable as they come. They showed the shot of him when he when they won against Quinnipiac, and he was still very stoic because the game, they were still reviewing it just in case. But, he's been a pretty steady presence, and, you know, arguably his best coaching thing was, you know, going with that freshman line, sticking with them all year long. But it's kind of amazing. I mean, we don't think about this. Boston College has exceeded their win total this year of their last two seasons, which is, you know, you said it earlier, right? We kind of expected Boston College to have this turnaround, but it's still pretty impressive to see.
Absolutely. Now, I know a lot of us around Hockey East are pulling for a BC-BU final. It certainly could wind up that way. They've never played against each other for a national title before, but it really should be an exciting weekend of hockey in Minnesota. And to have that chance to have a BC-BU final, boy, is it special, especially around here, isn't it?
It's really special, and I think, I was talking about it on the Hockey East show that Tyler and I have done the this year. There's a chance, depending on what happens, even beyond the BCBU potential final, that they have Hockey East right now, and between those two teams, have four of the top six, or five of the top six scorers in the country. They could have the top five scorers in the country by the end of this weekend, which is completely unheard of. There's no precedent for that whatsoever. There was a Michigan team back in 1998 that had four of the top eight scorers in the country. BC has four of the top six right now. There's all these different things that are just completely unprecedented. And as much as we were talking about earlier, it doesn't feel like these teams are going away anytime soon, but it's still pretty special to actually see it happening.
ESPN2 will have both games on Thursday. The BU Denver game will be at 5 o'clock, and then BC and Michigan will play at 8:30. ESPN2 will have both games, and then the championship game will be Saturday at 6 o'clock on ESPN. Eric, before we wrap up here, I just wanted to talk a little bit about your career prior to coming to Hockey East and Boston College. And of course, you went to Syracuse, and you received a very prestigious award that is given to the outstanding collegiate broadcaster in the country, and it is the Jim Nantz Award, and you were presented that down in North Carolina, and you had a chance to hear comments from Jim Nantz himself on the video presentation. So I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about that experience and how cool it was to actually hear from Jim.
Yeah, it was a special weekend. Very appreciative of John Chlesnik and STAA who run that, and invited me down there. And you get to meet a lot of different people, a lot of big time broadcasters that you grow up dreaming about being and watching and imitating and so on and so forth. And everyone's very nice and friendly and yeah, I actually just by luck. So, the town that I grew up in high school, Jim Nantz's daughter was a year behind me in high school. So I had actually met him in high school. He was nice enough. We had a radio station there. We were lucky enough. He was nice enough to share a lunch with me and a couple of the other guys that did it with me. So it was sort of a 4 years later, full circle moment after finishing up college to hear his video message. And we connected after the fact. He's always been, gracious in taking the winner of his award, whether it's out to lunch or to a press box or something. So we connected in Providence when he was in for a Patriots game that later that fall. And so yeah, it's a special thing. It's a special memory as you look back on it. I was lucky to have the opportunities then, and it really is amazing that. I joke, it's not that long. It's almost 10 years ago, but it's not that long ago in the grand scheme of things. And the thing that makes me the happiest is just the amount of opportunities there are for college students now that, it was trending that way then, but it wasn't quite there then yet. And so, being in a place like Syracuse, we're lucky to have the opportunities we have. But now, and John's been nice enough to ask me back to judge it the last couple of years. There's so many different schools that are not, Syracuse, Northwestern, and the normal list that you hear. It's extended so far beyond that. And that's a, pretty cool thing to see as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned John Chlesnik at STAA. I've been a client there for a long, long time, and it really is the greatest thing in the world for sportscasters, whether you're just starting out or you've been in the field for a while and you want advice and there's job leads. And John really has built that company up into the premier location for sportscasters.
Yeah, I love what he's done, through this award to help, college and newcomers is, into the industry as well, because it's not easy and it's not a path business, because we all have our different paths, right, to get wherever we get to. And so just, being able to provide some guidance on where that path might start out. And, you know, John and I have had conversations about this, and, you know, one of the things that I love that he's done in recent years is it's become less of a ranking and more of an All-American list in recent years. And I think that's cool because it, you know, it's not about you. It, this is such a competitive world as it is. And it doesn't have to be, but it just sort of naturally takes that on as a lot of things do. And just to be able to get recognized without having to think, what does it mean versus this person or something else, is a pretty cool thing that he's done. And he's provided a lot for college students getting to do this.
Eric, what's next for you, and how can people follow you? I know you have a great website out there, ericgalanti.com, but tell us about your upcoming schedule and where people can follow you.
Well, I guess next is watching the Frozen Four, right, and seeing what happens. Yeah, I've been, you know, lucky around here. I do a lot of stuff at Boston College, so we're in the throes of baseball season right now, which is exciting. And you know, you talk about at the difficulty of playing in the ACC at Boston College, but they're under a new head coach this year, and they're right on the edge of the conversation in the NCAA tournament. So it should be a fun rest of the year. So I do some stuff there and at Harvard and around the area. It's been fun this year. One of the special parts of Hockey East is Tyler Murray and I, who, you know, folks know Tyler, have started this sort of weekly show through Hockey East of trying to preview different games and just bring attention and bring more preview parts in rather than, you know, rehashing after the fact. And that's been fun to do, and a special year to do it. Obviously, as we've talked about with a lot of the good things about Hockey East. So we're hoping that continues in the future. And yeah, but just looking forward to an exciting Frozen Four, and hockey season will be back before we know it.
Okay. And how can people follow your work?
I am on X, I guess we're calling it now, right? Just at at Eric Galanti is probably the best place, and try to post whenever we're doing stuff there. And yeah, that's probably the best spot for me.
And also, give yourself a plug for the website that you're on, because it is very special. I was on it last night.
Well, I appreciate that. It's ericgalanti.com, and you know, we try to post some stuff up there.
All right, Eric. Well, it's very, very wonderful having you here. It has been wonderful. I hope you enjoy the games coming up on Thursday and then subsequently Saturday. I know you're pulling for BC. I'd like to see a Hockey East team win it. We certainly could have that, but it's been great having you here on the podcast, Eric. You're welcome here anytime, and I look forward to seeing you in the fall.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate you having me, and hope to do it again soon.
All right, he's Eric Galanti. He is the voice of Boston College hockey. You can catch him on ESPN Plus and NESN. Not sure if I'm going to have a podcast next week. I'll be on vacation the next week and a half. So whether we do one or not, stay tuned and I'll fill you in. So thanks to Eric Galanti, my special guest. I'm John Leahy. You've been listening to Airing It Out, files from Leahy's broadcast booth. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hi, this is John Leahy, host of Airing It Out, files from Leahy's broadcast booth. I wanted to take a moment and thank you for tuning into the podcast on a weekly basis. I truly appreciate my great audience. I'd also like to encourage you to consider subscribing to the podcast. We're on Apple and Spotify and virtually any place where podcasts are heard. So if you like the content, please consider subscribing. I appreciate it once again. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll enjoy this week's episode. Hi, this is John Leahy. Please check out my website at johnrleahy.com. You can explore the history of my time in sportscasting from my early days to the present. You can view my resume, listen and watch my audio and video demonstration reels, as well as learn about this podcast, my internet radio station, the Harbor Light Sessions Radio Network, watch my music demos, learn about my books, audiobook narration, and you can check out my event calendar. There's also an informational section with tips and tools in broadcasting, along with my personal influences and cool links. Check it out at johnrleahy.com.